Session number 10420, Reel 15.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 15. You left Lytton Cheney. Where did you go after that, Colonel?
Well, we were warned that we would go to an area where life would be not quite so hectic. And I know on the 26th of September, I had a final dinner with my old friends, the Harpers, with whom I was billeted. And on the 29th was our final day at, 29th of September, was our final day at Lytton Cheney. And it was the most glorious autumn day, and I had a farewell party with my friends at Bagdake, Mrs. Wordsworth and Nancy. And it was a very, very sad parting. And on the 30th of September, the whole battalion moved to an area inland from where we were already. Now, A Company of the battalion went to Frampton Court Stables, B Company went to Rampisham, and C, D, and the Reserve Company went to Caterstock. You've got to remember now, we were about over 1,000 strong because we'd been had lots of draft centres from the ITC. Now, headquarters, my headquarter company, was at Maiden Newton. It was billeted in the mill, the dairy, the railway hotel, the Cromwell Hall, and headquarters officers' mess was in Maiden Newton House, which was the old rectory and was in fact now occupied, was the home of Colonel Barnes. Now, Sammy Battiscombe and I, Sammy Battiscombe was now the second in command, of course, and I were billeted in a delightful house in Kingsway, Maiden Newton, which had been an old public house. And I think many of the rooms were panelled, but it was an extremely old house, and the owners were keen gardeners. They were members of the Royal Horticultural Society, and they had a truly delightful garden at the back. Obviously, they were very knowledgeable horticulturists. Well, Sammy Battiscombe and I lived there. I remember on one occasion there was a screaming bomb came down, and it did no damage. It merely killed a fox or something like that. But Sammy Battiscombe and I ran to the chimney to try and take shelter in the chimney of our room. Apropos of these bombs which did come, all along all this period which I've been talking about, German planes flew over in the evenings continually, but they were heading for Cardiff and Bristol. They didn't pay any attention to us. But as you'll hear later, time to time they jettisoned their bombs before returning home, and they jettisoned them on us. And this screaming bomb, while we were billeted, Sammy and I were billeted in our billet in Kingsway, was an example of a plane, German plane, jettisoning its bomb after having been to Cardiff and Bristol.
Did you have any anti-aircraft cover?
No, none at all. No, not there. But when the Blitz on London started, the aeroplane ceased to come over us in any large quantities. anyhow, on the 1st of October we settled in, and on the 3rd of October we almost, you might say, settled out, because there was a long divisional exercise. I'm not sure it wasn't a core exercise. It was a divisional exercise beginning of our so-called quiet period. Now, the 6DLI in this particular exercise, which I recollect very well, was in reserve to the brigade in an attack onto a line from Dorchester to Weymouth on the 2-battalion front. And the first evening, the 3rd of October, was a dragging evening in a copse. We were in a copse not far from Hardy's Monument. And I was in command, as well as commanding headquarter company, I was in command of what they call the forward, what they then called the forward body. In the old days, it used to be called the advance guard. And then we made a move to Winterbourne, St. Martin, and then down came the rain, which never stopped the whole of the exercise. And we then moved to a farm near Maiden Castle. Now, the orders for the battalion, given to the battalion subsequently, were that they was to seize certain crossings over the River Frome east of Dorchester. And I was ordered to seize certain bridgeheads near Broadmain. And it came back to me to seize these bridgeheads. It came back at the time, I remember so well, Hunter Bunter's crossing of the Marne of the Aisne in 1914, which we'd gone out to France to see by way of a divisional exercise. I thought, heavens, rain, wet, damp, river, crossing. We've got to get somehow, we've got to see some bridgeheads of some sort. And we set off in fine style, our advance guard, or whatever you like to call it, and the forward body. And we met an armoured car, I remember, and Tim Chamberlain, who was the carrier platoon commander at the time, he was always known as Neville Chamberlain. Incidentally, he was a relative of the Chamberlain family. Managed to deal with this armoured car with his carriers, and we got into Broadmain in the dark when there were three almighty explosions about 3/4 of a mile away. Now, they turned out to be bombs dropped by a German plane on the headquarters of the 8th DLI. The plane had come down almost to ground level, to tree level, and had seen undoubtedly the pinhead lights of the whole of the battalion headquarters. And not content with dropping the bombs, it had turned round and then come down and dived and machine gunned the headquarters. And the CO driver was killed, and there were many wounded. Anyhow, I pushed on my motorcycle platoon. Of course, we had a motorcycle platoon at that time too, with all speed, and we got there. I think I went out of bounds, you might say. But there was a lull. I got there so quickly, there was a lull at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think I managed to get about a couple of hours sleep. And by 5:45, getting on 6 o'clock, I started to investigate the crossings, which were affected by boats at about 9 a.m. the next morning, and the exercise terminated, and the brigadier was well satisfied. It was rather pouring with rain, of course. It was rather not frightfully good crossing, because the river was so small, and it only needed to pull with a boat, and you were across. But if you didn't pull with a boat, you went downstream fairly quickly. It was a canal-like river, not like any of our rivers round here. But it was a good brigade exercise. Went well. The brigadier enjoyed it and thought it very satisfactory and very well worthwhile. But it was a dreadful incident on the 8th Battalion. To be bombed like that.
Were you working with any other arms of the services in the exercise?
I can't remember now any other exercise. I'm just thinking of my personal experience. I suppose there were some gunners practicing. They couldn't fire, of course. But I remember the crossing quite well in the pouring rain. All of us were wearing Macintoshes and ground sheets. And merely the boats were brought up, of course. They had to be brought up for the purpose of crossing. And
did you carry boats with you?
Other boats were with us, yes. And, oh, yes. But it only needed a pull or two on the oars, and you were across the river. But if you didn't, it was fairly fast current, and the boat would be washed down.
What was the drill then? Did you take up a defensive position guarding the crossing?
Yes, we've got chaps across, riflemen across, and you started to use these boats backwards and forwards. But we got the bridgehead across, and the brigadier was very satisfied. But then, as I say, the battalion then was over 1,000 strong.
Were you in better straits as regards equipment by now?
Oh, by now, yes.
You were happy with the battalion?
Yes, wireless sets were coming in. The Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders had lost their bonnets, and they were well absorbed into the battalion. Then on the 6th of October, after that, two or three days later, the CO went for a quiet study at Corps headquarters. So back Sammy came to a CO, back I came as second in command, and I was then appointed Home Guard liaison officer once more. And I found that General Ramsay of Cattistock, who was known as Flash Fred, was in charge of the Home Guard there. Major Hewiff was in charge of the Home Guard at Frampton. And our old friend Colonel Barnes, whose house we were in, was in charge of the Home Guard at Maiden Newton. I know on one occasion he complained that our chaps were leaving the lights on in their billets, and so I said, well, let's go and have a walk round tonight and see what's on. And we found no lights at all, but we found Maiden Newton in utter darkness. And there was a Colonel Power in charge of the Home Guard at Bradford Peveril. And the head of all the Home Guard, I think I'm right in saying, was the Hornbys, a very rich family of Hornbys who lived in that area. And I made particular friends with them. Well, I had to in organizing liaison with his various units. And I always remember, too, that he lived in such style, he still had a footman. Back once more, I remember, on the 17th or thereabouts, middle of October, I was told I was to take over the PRI again and the billeting, and when Sammy Battiscombe went on leave, as well as a company commander, with a company then of 375 strong, with this, you see, the battalion was over 1,000, and my company itself was 375 strong, and Sammy Battiscombe was only to be responsible for the training of the battalion. So I had the PRI, Home Guard, billeting, and headquarter company commander, and Sammy Battiscombe really went on leave in about a couple of days later. And of course, too, I became brigade head chief umpire. The idea of our defense there really was to use the railways with their embankments or their cuttings as stop lines, so that if the Germans did get a foothold in the country, we were to try and stop them on these stop lines. Rivers, roads, if they were in cuttings, and railways. And all our training, whatever we did do, was based on these anti-tank stop lines. And we had, towards the end of October, an exercise in which I had to umpire the 6 Green Hards defending a length of the River Frome. It was a bitterly cold night, and I spent a lot of the time under a laurel bush, I think. I can't remember now much about the exercise, but that was what the whole exercise was, to stop tanks or the enemy on one of these organized stop lines, the River Frome.
As an umpire, what kind of things did you have to do?
I had to judge whether the platoon was working properly, whether the orders were given out, whether the platoon commander or the company commander or even the battalion commander was influenced by unnecessary, whether the men in the battalion actually made use of the ground, whether their gas drill was good, whether even they made provision for latrines, whether they were able to bring their food up successfully, whether they made a lot of noise or not, all that sort of thing. And you put it all down, and you brought the points out in the conference afterwards. There would be a conference of officers under the brigade commander afterwards, and you took it all. They all brought out their points, these points. And that's what I had to do. Later on, when there was a brigade exercise, I would have to umpire the whole outfit, the whole brigade, particularly brigade headquarters. But I'd have junior umpires with the battalions. And you brought it all out, talked about it afterwards. And sometimes they didn't like it. Other times you patted them on the back. But that was an exercise carried out by the Greenhards defending one of the stop lines. I spent the night, I think. There's always a lull in these exercises, sometime or other, and I think I spent a bit of the night, anyhow, in a calf shed, getting a bit of sleep somewhere. We used to have, the training also included map reading, and we had a map reading exercise, I know, one day when we were in this area, around Melbury Bob and Rhyme Intrinsica. And the star of the map reading exercise was the MO, our good MO, David Joy. I think he knew really a great deal of the countryside because he lived down there. But his map reading was quite excellent, a good deal better than many of the junior officers. But it was a very good exercise, I remember that, map reading. Then, right at the end of the month, the Duke of Gloucester came in pouring rain. He was late. And I put on a bathing demonstration, or what you like to call it that. We were in the dairy, and the big vats were bars for the chaps. And as he came in, the Duke of Gloucester came in, every man jumped into one of these vats with an enormous splash, with steam boiling all around. And I'm sure he realized that it was all put on for his benefit. And he then came back and had tea in the house, in the officers' mess at Maiden Newton House, and then left. He didn't spend very long. But one thing he did ask me was, did I know Flash Fred? And he called him Flash Fred. I said, yes, sir, I do indeed know Flash Fred. And obviously he knew too, this particular general Ramsay.
How did he get his nickname, Flash Fred?
I really don't know, but we were told he was Flash Fred. And the Duke of Gloucester too said, do you know Flash Fred? And I said, yes, I do, sir. Flash Fred was a very gallant, I think, probably had been a very gallant general who was retired, but he certainly used his general traditions and in Maiden Newton or his characteristics in and around Maiden Newton, particularly with the Home Guard, of which I had considerable experience.
How did you feel about these visits from important people? Did they help with morale?
We never had. This was the only one we ever had, apart from His Majesty, which I think I've already mentioned at Burford before we went to France. No, we weren't bothered with at all with these visits. No, we were so far away from the metropolis. But we did have him. He did go and visit the canteen in Cattistock, and he came to tea in the mess. He didn't come till 5, and so it was a late tea. But I do remember him asking me if I knew Flash Fred. At this time, Monty was our corps commander, and he said he didn't want us anymore. It comes in his history that he didn't want the 50th Division anymore. He didn't think much of it. It was a territorial division and not up to his liking. And so we were warned that Monty was to, we were to move, and we were to go down to Devonshire. And on the 2nd, I think it was, no, 21st of November, the 21st of November, we moved to Devon. Advance parties moved on about the 18th, they would move on the 18th, and the King's Own, first King's Own Scottish Borderers moved to Maiden Newton and took over our billets. Now, I do remember that the second in command of the King's Own Scottish Borderers, the 1st Battalion, got tight in the mess that night, which we thought was pretty grim. You go and visit, you come to a territorial battalion mess and you can't behave yourself. And I went that night all the way back to Bag Lake in Lytton Cheney and had another farewell party. And that's the last I ever saw of Mrs. Wordsworth, Anne Wordsworth, and Nancy until many years later, which I recalled. I met at my prep school where my two boys were at the time. Well, so we moved to Devon on the 21st of November, and we settled in, and the headquarters and headquarters company were at Ufcombe, and Comstock, the carriers were at Comstock, and the signallers were at Willand, and A Company were at Wellington, and B, C, and D companies were at Columpton. And I was billeted the headquarters officers' mess was in the Masonic Hall in Ufcombe. And I was billeted in Bridewell, a big house occupied by two old bachelors, J.W. and Alfred Clark. They were both bachelors, and they were a little affected by the war. There were three indoor staff when I arrived,